You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures. Welcome to Sustainable Futures. On this episode, we're going to be speaking with Ashley Duyker from the BC Cancer Society about cosmetic chemical pesticides.
There's a number of municipalities, about 27 to date in BC, that have banned the use of these products. And our biggest challenge is, while the use is banned because the health and environmental issues have been recognized, they are still available for sale.
And we're going to have an interview with elementary student Miranda Anderson about her project on Ruth Foster, Her Hero, which was an award-winning international project.
Yes, I came first in the elementary school, and I had no idea that I had won or that I was even going. one night, my parents said, "Pack some things, we are going on a trip and we might stay overnight."
And in the last 25 minutes, we're going to have a live update from the Olympic ceremonies downtown Vancouver. So stay tuned. Sustainable Futures is next. That introductory song is by Moira. It's called Like a Mountain. In introduction, I misannounced Ashley Duyker. She's actually from the Canadian Cancer Society and not the BC Cancer Society. That's an important distinction. So that will be the first interview on the show today. This is episode number 49, and it's going to be a jam-packed show, lots of different content covering the whole realm of sustainable behaviors. Here's interview number one. You're listening to Sustainable Futures. This is Ryan Fletcher interviewing Ashley Duyker, Community Action Coordinator for the Canadian Cancer Society. We're going to be talking a little bit about chemical pesticides today and some issues around cosmetic chemical pesticides. Just as a little lead-in, the Canadian Cancer Society has called the BC government for a ban on the use and sale of cosmetic chemical pesticides, and we're going to talk about that a little bit today. So welcome to the show, Ashley.
Thank you.
And first of all, what are chemical pesticides?
Well, chemical pesticides and what we refer to as cosmetic chemical pesticides are those pesticides used on a lawn or garden to otherwise improve the appearance. So currently in BC, you can buy them at Canadian Tire. They might include things such as Kilex or Roundup, and they're chemicals used to improve the appearance of a lawn or garden.
And how are things with that now? People still use that frequently, I guess, then?
You know, a tide is changing. There's a number of municipalities, about 27 to date in BC, that have banned the use of these products. And our biggest challenge is, while the use is banned because the health and environmental issues have been recognized, they are still available for sale. And so that's why the Canadian Cancer Society is calling on the province to ban the use and sale of these products. So there's several retailers so far that have taken these products off the shelves, such as Rona and Home Depot, and others who have not.
So they're for sale, but not for use.
in some municipalities, yes.
So 27 municipalities. Is that in B.C.?
That's in B.C., yes.
Maybe you can give us some context there. How many municipalities are there in B.C.?
You know, that's a good question, and I should know that. But to give you an example of some of the municipalities that have done this, you know, Vancouver, Richmond, Burnaby, all of the North Shore municipalities, White Rock, you know. So it really is, you know, especially in the Lower Mainland here, a trend, and, you know, on Vancouver Island, Saanich, and the interior, Kimberley, Kelowna. So it's far-reaching.
Okay. Why should they be banned?
Well, the Canadian Cancer Society believes that the use of cosmetic chemical pesticides should be banned because essentially they're not essential. They're used to make a lawn or garden look pretty, and there's growing evidence showing links to cancer. And so that's why we're calling for a ban on these products. The growing evidence links pesticides to adult and childhood cancers, including leukemia, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, cancers of the brain, kidney, pancreatic, and prostate. So it's a long list. We also know that children are at greater risk from the effects of pesticides due to their undeveloped immune systems, perhaps their more permeable skin, and behaviors such as, you know, crawling on the grass, rolling around, putting objects in their mouth. So it's really not worth it.
So I suppose, I mean, the term cosmetic, I always think of makeup and stuff. But I guess that's because it's non-essential. Is that what the term?
That's how we would define it. So the cosmetic use of pesticides is not essential. It has no benefit other than to improve the appearance of public, you know, and private land.
Is there any backlash against this?
Absolutely. I think, you know, well, the public absolutely supports it. You know, we have a poll that we did in 2008, I believe, that, you know, shows that 76% of British Columbians would support provincial legislation. You know, and 85% of British Columbians are open to alternatives. Certainly, you know, the chemical industry, you know, it's in their best interest to keep these products available for sale. And so we are certainly seeing arguments against our call. But we do believe it's in the best interest of the public and our environment to make these changes.
And so the chemical industry, who are some of the, you know, the players? I mean, can you mention some of the companies that are that sell this?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, some of the manufacturers, so without targeting specifically, I can share with you a story from last spring, which happened in Richmond, a municipality that was going through discussion about banning the use of cosmetic pesticides, which is in their jurisdiction to do. And CropLife Canada, who's a major chemical supplier here of chemical pesticides, came to Richmond and they held a meeting. So the citizens of Richmond, actually, there was probably about 100 people that organized a peaceful protest outside of this CropLife meeting to let them know that, you know, they didn't want these products in their community. They didn't want their children exposed to these products any longer. So that's an example of some of what's been going on.
And CropLife Canada, it sounds so harmless. Yeah. I always find it interesting the way companies name themselves.
Yes. Well, you know, I can share with you, just last week we had the privilege of screening a movie called A Chemical Reaction. And if you're interested in learning about the companies and things, that's certainly a film that is worth watching. It basically tells the story of the first municipality in Canada who passed a bylaw, and that was Hudson, Quebec. And they were taken to court all the way up to the Supreme Court of Canada by a company called Spraytech. And so it's kind of a David and Goliath story and really shows the beginning of what will be, I think, a Canada-wide movement.
Do you have any, like, direct correlations between the pesticides and things like cancer? Has there been any, like, real study on that?
Absolutely. There, you know, there's a number of studies which we do rely on. For example, the International Agency for Research on Cancer has a number of studies which do show this link, as well as studies out of the States. In fact, you know, Canada is not necessarily a leader in this, but in Europe, many of these products are already banned. So there is a growing body of evidence linking pesticides to not only cancer, but a host of other issues, including asthma, learning disabilities, Parkinson's, and environmental issues.
Mm-hmm. And why do people buy them? Why are they used? I mean, it's a cosmetic, but what's the benefit?
You know, not being an avid gardener myself and never having used pesticides, you know, I may not be the best person to answer that question, but I think it comes down to a quick fix. You know, we live in a society which is changing, but, you know, where the dream is to have the green lawn and the white picket fence, perhaps. And so in order to maintain that, these products, you know, have been sold and are used to obtain that look of perfection. But in fact, you know, the natural lawn care business is booming. I've been told by many experts that there's so many alternatives. Chemicals, in fact, are not necessary in order to have a green lawn or to have a beautiful piece of property.
In places where this is available, do you have any information on what the trend is? Are fewer people buying it or more people?
Places where alternatives are available?
No, where the pesticides are available.
I don't have information. You know, there's certainly people are still purchasing these. I think that's one of the challenges and arguments we hear, that, you know, if they're available for sale and they're banned for use, people don't understand, you know, without education around it. A lot of people think, well, if they're still for sale, they must be safe, when in fact that's not the case.
I can understand that person, because this issue is not a new one. It's been brought up before, and I feel like it's generally understood that the, like DDT, the whole Silent Spring thing, and all that. So yeah, was that not also part of the, you know, the famous Rachel Carson book, Silent Spring? Was that not her issue? I've actually never read the book. Do you know that?
You know, I read that book back in university, and absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, she said it back then, and we're still working on the issue now.
Yeah.
And so, in fact, an interesting story in Richmond. I came in touch with a mother who's actually led the charge to ban pesticides in her community, and was successful. And when I met her, she had written a letter to the editor, and she'd come across that the city of Richmond was using Roundup on their parks and playgrounds. And she thought, wow, don't we know this is bad for us? Like, how could the city still be using this? And she thought, just like you did, you know, these products have been known to not be safe, so why are we using them?
Mm-hmm. Right. And so that makes, I can see how that makes the sale of it a very important thing, to stop the sale. You could definitely see how someone will say, well, it's for sale, so it must not be chemical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, the way people get so obsessed with their lawns. I'm so far from that place, it's hard to find. I don't know why that's so important to some people. But you said the company's name was Canadian Crop. Do people use this for crops as well?
The company that came to Richmond?
Yeah.
They're CropLife Canada. They do manufacture products which are used in agriculture as well, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. What is the primary source of these chemicals? Like, what part of our environment do they come from? Do you know? Like some of these chemicals that are used.
You know, I don't know. I'm not familiar with how they're manufactured.
Okay. Usually they're byproducts of other industrial processes. So for people wanting to care for their lawn, what's some good things to use instead?
Well, you know, I think there's a growing list of alternatives and alternative products out there, but there's also just alternative mechanisms and ways to do things. I think, you know, and I'm told by many of the natural gardening experts that I come into contact with that, you know, by mowing high, watering less frequently, planting native plants, you know, replacing your lawn with a food garden or something else, you know, perhaps those are alternatives. But certainly having a green lawn, if that's important to you, is achievable with natural alternatives. And, you know, perhaps a few dandelions aren't an issue. I know most kids these days can't distinguish the difference between a dandelion and a flower. So why instill a fear that they're a weed, right? But I think perhaps what's also important for your listeners to know is that in order to make this happen and to encourage the government to ban these products, which, you know, many of your listeners may be aware that they're harmful for use, is that we need their voice, and we need them to speak out to the government and send letters to participate in our call to action.
Mm-hmm. Where is this in the process, though? What's been happening lately on the issue?
Well, currently the government is undergoing public consultation on this issue, so basically they want to hear from the public whether or not they want legislation banning the use and sale of cosmetic chemical pesticides. So the Canadian Cancer Society, we've made it very easy for public to participate. You can visit our website, which is cancer.ca/bc/advocate. Mm-hmm. And you can directly send an email, which will go to the public consultation as well as to the BC government requesting a ban. And we've also got lots of information on there on why we're calling for a ban.
Mm-hmm. Is there going to be any public meetings with government officials?
From what I know, there is no public meetings during the consultation process. They do have a website where people can, you know, read the consultation paper and respond. And as I said, the Canadian Cancer Society has made it easy to participate in the consultation directly from our website as well.
Okay. What kind of response has the government had?
Well, you know, I participated in a call yesterday where it was a teleconference and you could ask questions about the consultation because, you know, for the non-expert in the field, perhaps if you read the consultation, it's a little bit complicated. I don't know if the layman would take the time to read through it unless it's an issue they're quite passionate about. They said they have gotten a good response. So I think British Columbians are speaking out, but, you know, we need volumes of people to let their voices be heard. And I think, you know, just speaking out in terms of legislation increases awareness and education that perhaps these products are not safe and we shouldn't be using them. Because, well, we want to see legislation. It doesn't have to take a ban to make a personal decision to not use these products and to protect the environment and your family.
So maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the film, A Chemical Reaction.
Yes.
So who produced it? Is there anywhere it's playing upcoming, or is there...
In BC, we've just wrapped up two films, one in Vancouver and one in Victoria. So the film is produced by Paul Tooth. He was a former lawn care provider and has quite an inspiring story to tell. He's also a journalist by trade, so we had the privilege of having him attend our film premiere here in Vancouver last week and in Victoria. The film, to my knowledge, is not being screened anywhere else in Vancouver, but Paul's actually in the process of paying a debt to CBC, which was where footage was taken from, and when that's paid, he'll have permission to show it. But I do know that he is doing a bit of a roadshow throughout the States and, you know, going to some other provinces in Canada to show this film. But the trailer is available on YouTube. It's a fantastic film, so when we know when it's being shown again, we'll certainly let the word out.
Okay. And what's the response been to the film?
Well, you know, we showed it at Park Theatre last week and in Victoria at the David Lamb Theatre. And I think everyone who attended walked away feeling like they wanted to, you know, write the government to take action. You know, it's a story that tells the story of Hudson Quebec and why and how they were successful to be in banning the use of these chemicals when they were faced, you know, as I said, up against spray tech and going all the way to the Supreme Court. And they were, in the end, ruled in favor of their right to ban these chemicals. So it's an interesting story, not only about lawn chemicals, but I think about activism in general. And it tells the story of how, you know, when you believe in something and you're persistent, you can make a difference. And so I feel like everyone that walked out of that film walked away with a toolbox of things to do and ways to achieve success in activism.
It's always good to see something like that, too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
What time period is this in? Like, when was this battle? What?
You know, it wasn't so long ago. I think Paul produced this and made this film just in the past 2 years. He took a trip up to Hudson, Quebec to meet some of these people that, you know, have quite frankly made history. And I believe that they passed their first bylaw in 2006.
Wow, that is not very long ago.
No.
Well, why has it taken so long then, with all the information that was out there?
Well, I mean, I think it takes a few people to start the ball rolling who believe in it, right? The saying, change will not come to those who wait, right?
So yeah, true.
It's taken people who believe in it, and that's what we're asking of British Columbians, is if you want the same protection, please get involved. Please, you know, visit our website, send a letter to the government, talk about the issue with your neighbors, so that we, you know, we shouldn't be falling behind here in BC. We should be leaders.
Yeah, I'd say so, and it's about time, you know. I don't know what someone could say in defense of chemical pesticides on the lawns. Like, has there been any public voice that as act on behalf of the chemical procedure?
Well, I mean, as with any issue, I think there's always arguments, but I think it's quite clear, you know, better to be safe than sorry. If we look at the precautionary principle,
mm-hmm.
you know, if we look at tobacco as an example, if we knew then what we knew now, we would have acted sooner. So, mm-hmm. so let's not make the same mistake here. Let's take action.
Right, right. So you were mentioning in our little pre-interview conversation that the consultations will be wrapping up February 15th. What happens after that?
Well, I believe the information, everyone's response will be compiled and looked at, and the decision will be made based on somewhat on that by government. So, again, that's why we just think it's so important that if you feel strongly about this issue, and we hope you do, that your listeners would visit our website and would send an email to the government sharing their views and asking that these products are banned for use and sale.
Okay. Is there anything else you would like to add to the conversation?
No, just as I said, to please, you know, visit our website, participate in the consultation. If you have any questions, you know, our contact information is on there.
Okay. I've been speaking with Ashley Diker, Community Action Coordinator for the Canadian Cancer Society, and you're listening to Sustainable Futures.
You are listening to Sustainable Futures on CJSF 90.1 FM. Our next interview was done right here at CJSF in studio. I had a group of four or five different individuals come in, and we were celebrating the great success of Miranda Ederson with her school project about My Hero. It's the My Hero Project, which won an International Web Award for being the best presentation at the elementary school level of My Hero. So we'll hear all about what Miranda did, and that is coming up next.
You're listening to Sustainable Futures, and I'm here with Miranda Anderson, Ruth Foster, Jen Whiffen, Griffin, and Patty Anderson. And we're all going to be talking about a wonderful project that was very successful on the internet and a contest that Miranda did. So tell me a little bit about your project, Miranda.
It all started in a class project, and we had to write about our heroes. And I chose someone local, Ruth Foster, and since she was local, I had the great chance of interviewing her. And I interviewed her, and with that, we made a movie out of it.
Oh, excellent. And where are you from?
I'm from Belcarra.
Was this a school project, too?
No, just a class project.
A class project? Yeah. And the class was in Belcarra also, I guess?
It was in Anmore, which is very
Anmore?
Close
to Okay. Right. So why did you choose Ruth Foster?
Because she's really dedicated, like very, very dedicated. Sometimes we drive past and we see her picking out invasive weeds from ditches. And in Mossam Creek last year, there was a silt slide in Anmore, which washed mm-hmm. down to Mossam Creek. And she hiked up in the snow because there was so much snow, so she couldn't drive up. And she picked out the silk from the trays every morning.
Mm-hmm. How many people were involved in the class project?
The entire class had to choose a hero. Either, mm-hmm. And I encouraged local heroes so that they had a chance of really contacting their heroes and interviewing them. But many chose heroes that were non-local as well. And everybody had to do a writing project and a research project to go with it. And the film project, a documentary project, was something that was completely optional. And they had to be willing to do it in their free time. So after school, Monday is when we worked on the project.
So this was after school?
Yeah.
Was most of it done after school, or was there most of it done?
Most of it was done after school. And Ms. Muffin spent countless hours with me supervising mm-hmm. me while I was doing my project.
How big is your class?
You mean in terms of number of students?
Yeah.
30.
30?
Yeah.
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 What age is the class?
4 or 5.
Yeah, grade 4 or 5.
Grade
yeah.
4 or 5.
They're 9 and 10, basically.
9 and 10?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was 9 last year, so.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the experience. What's the first thing you had to do?
Well, the first thing we had to do was we planned it all out, and we decided what we were going to do and how we were going to, what order. And then we basically got all the photos and put them in a certain order, and then we added the rest. And I had to go on GarageBand and create music to fit the movie. And it was really hard to get the music to get in the very right place.
This is what they call video editing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very tricky. Was this your first major documentary?
Yes.
Have you done anything like that before?
No, we've done little short ones and worked with iMovie, but we haven't made a big film.
It takes a lot of commitment to do it, because there's so many layers to it that, you know, the writing and the planning layers are really, really extensive. And then, you know, getting all the footage that she needed, it wasn't that she could just pull images off the internet. You know, she had to go and get film footage and ask. And any of the old photos that were used needed to be scanned. And, you know, all of that was legwork that she needed to do on her own time. So not too many people picked up the project as an after-school one, because it involved so many so many hours on their own.
Yes, and Ruth was very helpful. We would email her, and me and my mom, and we'd tell her, just ask for a little bit of information, say not to write this huge paragraph, and she'd send us, like, 2 pages.
Yeah, there was tons of information to sift through. And tons of footage, too, she had to sift through.
Yes.
So what are your feelings about this, Ruth? When did you first hear about this project? Or when did have you met before? Have you worked with Miranda before in your hatchery? Or
I'm not sure when you started coming to the hatchery. Miranda, it was about, 6 months before, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Because our librarian at my school was friends with Ruth, so that's how I got started.
You came up with your class for a school tour one time, I think.
Yeah, that was later on, though, I think.
So what is it that makes Ruth such a hero?
Oh, like I said before, she's really, really dedicated and inspiring, and I'm not sure how she could have... She did so much work, and it's all volunteering.
It's all volunteer.
Yeah, all volunteering.
Maybe you could elaborate a little bit about what you do at the hatchery. Which hatchery is this? And maybe tell us a little bit about that, Ruth.
Okay, this is the Mawson Creek Hatchery, and it's in Port Moody, in Burt Flynn Park, and you would get to it along Ioka Road. So it's actually on the border of Port Moody, and Anmore sits right above it. So our receiving waters are from Anmore. The problem that Miranda mentioned earlier with silt was the result of a poor development process up in Anmore. So the hatchery was actually started way back in 1976 as a school project at Centennial School in Coquitlam. That's a high school that I taught at for a lot of years. And it started off as a club, school club, and then we added on to that a couple of courses that kids could take, Fish and Wildlife 12, Wildlife of BC 11, Fisheries Ecology Career Prep, and used the hatchery as our field site for all of that as well. And then we developed to a point where we built a society as well, because we had students that had graduated who still wanted to be part of it. So we formed the Burrard Inlet Marine Enhancement Society. And now we have people who are 10 and even 20 years out from the time that they volunteered, who are bringing their kids to the hatchery. So that's kind of cool.
So it sounds like it's a really good community thing as well.
It is good. There's a lot of gray power and intergenerational stuff going on. And it's
gray power, older
people?
Yeah,
gray power.
I've never heard that before.
We're trying to tap into more of that in the community, because that's such a resource. People with experience and time and who want to give back. So we welcome anyone and everyone, and we really try to be welcoming to all ages and all skills and all abilities.
So then another element of this, I understand, is there was an internet, a website called My Hero.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that part.
Well, the writing part that we wrote about our heroes went on the website, and we could view it, and so the film went along with that, right?
Mm-hmm. So the film was entered into a contest? Was it a contest?
Yes, a contest.
Okay. And what was this contest?
It was about heroes, and there was different categories. Mm-hmm. Like, there was elementary school, and middle school, and high school, and a lot of other categories. And, yes, I came first in the elementary school, and I had no idea that I had won, or that I was even going. one night, my parents said, pack some things, we are going on a trip and we might stay overnight. And so me and my brother did. And then the next morning they woke us up at, what time was it, Mom?
3:30
in the morning. Mm-hmm. And we drove to an airport and we went left for Los Angeles. And on the plane I found out that it was because we were going to the My Hero Film Festival in California.
Mm-hmm.
And I got there and I went to the film festival, and then when I was there I did not know that I'd won until my name came up on the screen.
And how did you feel when that happened?
I was blown away. I was really surprised. Mm-hmm. Honored.
Well, this was an international contest.
It was.
Yes, that's quite a big deal. In addition to winning, what else happened? Was there any kind of prizes or anything like that?
Oh, yes. Do you have it?
Okay. Something that's in the car right now. A new car?
I won a bird trophy, and it was made out of recycled materials, and it was all the way from
Senegal.
Yeah. And one of the other videos was based on the bird maker who had made it. So mm-hmm. A man brought a number of different kinds of these birds, and when I went up to receive my prize, I just stood there for a few minutes thinking, what do I pick? Difficult to choose.
Okay. And Patty, were you aware of that she had won the contest, or was that a surprise for you as well?
Well, the whole thing was a surprise. I guess in the early part of the fall, we found out that she was a finalist, and we let her know, and we let her teacher, Mrs. Whiffen, know. So I started sort of making some rough plans for possibly going to California. We were happy to go, regardless of what her standing was. We just wanted her to be there, and we thought that the nomination and being the finalist was enough of an award in and of itself. So we sort of made rudimentary plans, but we didn't let anybody know those plans because we didn't know what would come of it. And mm-hmm. about 10 days before the actual film festival in November, I received an email that she had won, and I was home alone, and it was shortly before the kids were coming home. So I phoned my husband, and we shared that wonderful news, and I called Mrs. Whiffen and shared that wonderful news. And when Miranda got home, I just spent a lot of time hugging her, but I didn't actually tell her why. So she was quite curious as to why Mom was so joyful after school on this particular day. So we kept it a secret, and everything that could go wrong went wrong the week before. Griffin wound up in emergency. He was ill. He got double ear infections. It just seemed like the travel gods were against us. Uh-huh. And it all worked out. We got on the plane, and it was their first plane ride, and uh-huh. it couldn't have gone any better. It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience, and Miranda was very, very humble throughout, very gracious, and they treated her like a queen there, and she didn't know why until later, but it was all very positive, and we were very proud to be able to mm-hmm. send her there and be there with her for that.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Is there anything else anyone would like to add to the conversation?
Well, Ruth also got an award, a hero award that I got to present to her.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And when I presented it to her, she said it was for Mossum Creek, not for her. And we corrected her right away and said, no, it's for you. The film was about you, not the creek.
Mm-hmm. She's very humble and
had
such a hard time accepting that she was a hero and not just an everyday person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, what do you say, Ruth? You know, when it comes to, you know, making a difference in any way that you can, you know, either through the hatchery or out the roadside pulling up invasive weeds, you know, and if not me, then who is going to do this, you know? And I think about that a lot, too, to be honest with you. And we find her all over the place. Like, we happen upon Ruth in at Cedarbrook near Thrifty's, and there's a creek that runs under the complex, and you look out at the bridge, and there's Ruth, you know, going out weeds and catching salmon. And yeah, you find her on the road, and you know, she's just everywhere, you know, doing this work quietly on her own. And
well,
I think that's the epitome of a hero, to be honest with you.
You couldn't ask for a better role model for our youth, and frankly, for us adults either.
Yeah.
To have my kids to be able to be under her tutelage at the hatchery on a regular basis, and to have her as a resource in the community and beyond. She's a pioneer in what she does, and she has so many branches of her environmental educator tree spread in so many different places. You know, not only is the hatchery a gem, but Ruth is a gem there in the hatchery as well. So we're very lucky.
Now, if people listening want to get involved with the hatchery, what do they do?
I would say they could probably just show up on a Sunday morning at the hatchery. It's at the very top end of Mawson Creek Drive. To volunteer, we'll find something for them to do.
Okay.
The gates open at 10:30 in the morning, and the gates are right down by Ioco Road. And it'll be lovely to see some people. They could bring a treat or two. We usually have coffee and cookies on or something like that. We're always looking for more of that sort of stuff. But generally, there are hands-on things to do every week throughout the whole year. We're dead picking eggs right now, which means
you really mean it too, because I've seen that video when you were there in the winter.
Well, there are lots of different things to do. We had a big tree fall down into the hatchery compound a couple of weeks ago, so there was a great deal of sawing up of a huge log to be done. And it is great for kids. We're all concerned about kids and the amount of screen time they get now instead of green time. You know, they're absolutely mesmerized by all sorts of screens, their television, their computer, their phones, and they need to get outside more.
Right. That's great for that. And I guess the screen time of the video, where can people go to watch this video?
They can go to myhero.com, and all you need to do is just type in My Hero, and it'll come up. And you can type in Ruth Foster or Miranda Anderson, and it should probably be there.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being here and sharing your story.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to go to some audio content from the Olympic events downtown Vancouver with assistance from some of our fantastic staff here at CJSF 90.1. Here's a series of interviews I've done around the Olympics in this first 4 or 5 days of Olympic competitions. I'm just going to jump from one piece of audio to the next. The very first audio you'll hear will be from Tent City, which is where the homeless are residing during the Olympics. They have a bunch of tents put out in a vacant square at Hastings Street. The second interview is going to be with a kiosk type operation that is for tap water. People getting clean tap water that are at the Olympics. Then I'll have two more. The third interview will be with a resident of Yale Town that I did yesterday morning on a nice walk as the beautiful sun was just starting to shine. And the fourth interview will be with transit information people that I saw just outside of the Granville City Center SkyTrain. Hi, this is Ryan Fletcher of CJSF, reporting from Tent Village on Hastings here, and I'm here with Stella, and thank you for giving us your time, Stella.
Yeah, my name is Stella Stellaugh. I'm a House of Band member from the west coast of Vancouver Island, but I've been a long-time resident for the downtown east side, and I speak for our people on the downtown east side. The reason for this Tent City is we're trying to get across to the government that our people should not be homeless in our beautiful country. You know, with the Olympics that is here now has increased the homelessness. And I'm hoping that for what we're doing is that they will recognize us on the downtown east side of the poor side of town, you know, because it's urgent to get homes for these homelessness, because it's young and old, pensioners, elders, you know, and mental people and handicapped people in scooters and wheelchairs that are homeless. That's so wrong. It should never happen, you know. And we're going to stay out and speak out until we're heard. Mm-hmm.
And were you involved with the organization of this? How was this organized?
I'm just a volunteer. I just fall in place whatever action comes on, because it's the downtown east side I stand up for.
Okay. And do the people stay here all day long?
Stay all day, all night. And we're going to stay as long as we can stay, you know, and support our people for the downtown east side, the poor side of town.
Has there been any base? Has there been enough space for everybody here?
Oh, there hasn't been any problem at all. There's lots of room here, and everybody's welcome. And this is a peaceful rally, you know, from our hearts. We're full of spirit and laughter and warm and comfort for the homeless.
Okay, thank you very much. And is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
For the Olympics and the rich people to party hardy here, and the police are watching us, just watching us. For what, you know? I mean, what is wrong with the poor people? Why can't they party hardy and camp out and have a good time too, you know? The rich people and the Olympics can pack up and leave our country, you know, because they expanded the poverty big time for our country here. And people are going to be hurting big time after the Olympics are gone, because I feel for the taxpayers that have to pay the big debt that they're leaving behind.
Okay, thank you very much. So it's Ryan from CJSF, and I'm just going to take a moment to describe what's here. So we're just on Hastings Street, the corner of Hastings and Abbott, and there's about a dozen, 20 to 30 tents, a fire inside an empty cauldron. A lot of people sitting around the fire. That's where I met Stella. We have some food that's being put out by Food Not Bombs. And a lot of people here. Okay, so here I am on the corner of Homer and Robson. And there's a table here about taking the tap water pledge. And I have a couple of people with me. What's your name, fine lady?
I'm Jane.
And yourself?
I'm Sam.
Okay. What is this Tap Water Pledge?
The Tap Water Pledge is a campaign that is put on by Metro Vancouver. What we're encouraging people to do is to make a choice to drink tap water out of reusable water containers instead of purchasing bottled water in single-use plastic bottles. Mm-hmm. One of the big reasons that we're encouraging this is that in 2010, we'd like to decrease the amount of bottled water consumption by 20%, and that in turn is going to help contribute to our zero waste challenge, where we're trying to get to a 70% diversion of waste from the landfills by 2015.
Okay. And how's it been going? Are you getting many visitors here?
We've had hundreds and hundreds of visitors come by and make a promise that they'll drink tap water instead of bottled water. They come up to this booth and they sign a pledge, and they also have the option to drink as much water as they'd like out of our water wagon.
Yes, a water wagon. Okay. What's to my right is a water wagon. I'm curious as to what this is about. What's this water wagon?
The water wagon was created in Stratford, Ontario. It's basically a giant mobile drinking fountain. It also has an 1,100-liter tank inside for events that don't have a hookup for water. It can be hooked up to a hydrant or basically a giant watering hose. We are bringing them to many municipalities all over Canada and the U.S. And the company is called Coolers, the only company in North America that creates these environmentally friendly drinking devices.
So is it tapping right into like a hydrant, like a fire hydrant?
Yeah, there's actually a hydrant right behind you that it's tapped into. And inside, it's just a giant tank with filters. There's taps and spigots on the side to fill up your water bottle.
Okay. I have a question about the pledge. If someone takes the pledge, is there a system of accountability for them?
They need to be accountable to themselves.
Uh-huh.
They're going to get a pin when they make this pledge. And we just found that when people make a written commitment to carry out some behavior change, then there seems to be a higher percentage of compliance with that. So it's up to each individual to be accountable to what they understand is mm-hmm. a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And what about tap water? How does Vancouver's tap water kind of rate as far as cleanliness and drinkability is concerned? Do you have any information on that?
We've got some of the best tap water in the world. The Seymour Capilano Filtration Plant has just come online this month, and we've got state-of-the-art filtration and distribution system happening from there.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I just wandering around a bit more. So I'm just going to have a look at this fountain. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Got 16 taps, either by regular taps or fountain structures. So you could have 16 people getting water from this at the same time. It's got 1,100 meters, liters. So that's quite cool. That's my story. It's the watered down version, though.
Buddy, come back here. What's your name?
It's Corey Adams.
Corey Adams. Are you from Vancouver?
Yeah, we live about 3 blocks away.
Okay.
It's a long time coming. It finally is here, and it really blew my mind how many people are downtown walking around and enjoying themselves. And
yeah,
you know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of troublemakers either, right?
Yeah, and as a Yale Town resident, I guess it's probably even more profound, the change. How do you feel about this change that just in the, even the past 2 or 3 weeks in the neighborhood?
Well, what do you feel by the change in the neighborhood, just with the excitement and
yeah.
and all the extra yeah. things that are going on? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, it's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to stay at home and just watch it on TV, right? You want to
yes.
get out and you want to get out and enjoy it.
And have you caught any of the entertainment? Or
we have been down to Live City twice and went to Robson Square last night.
Okay.
But my wife and kids, you know, I work, but my wife and kids are out every day.
Uh-huh.
Enjoying it, right?
Yeah.
Going through the different houses. Been to Soul House. We've been to Swiss House, Grand Blanc.
And what's it like on the inside? I've actually never been to one of those. What happens in those houses?
Well, there's it's different. Like some houses are more, they seem to be more party places with TV and places where people get together, watch the games. And other ones are more business orientated where they're trying to.
Hey, Calvin! Get yeah. back here! Calvin is running way ahead. He's very excited about this sunny morning, I think.
Calvin!
We have a beautiful sunny morning here on what day is it today? Thursday. Thursday the 18th.
Took off on us here.
And are these houses for fans of different countries to go and watch their...
Yeah, it looks like some of them are, but some of them seem to be more business, like uh-huh. trying to show the different, you know... businesses, you know, Italian house, we went there, there was not much to see there.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Alberta House last night, that was fun.
Yeah.
On Alberta Day.
It's all just for the different
where
provinces,
I grew
too.
Up in Edmonton, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
just got to catch up with Calvin. It's like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes. It's a very beautiful morning this morning. There's a lot of nice energy in the air. You can probably hear a sound check happening just by the Live City Yale Town location and getting the sounds of morning here in Olympic Vancouver. Alright. Hi. I was wondering if you'd be interested in talking about your Olympic experience this far.
I'm late, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, so am I. I should probably get to you about where I'm going. So this is Ryan Pletcher, Thursday morning, the 18th. Just on the boardwalks, enjoying the morning sun. Hi, this is Ryan with CJSF, and I'm just talking with a bunch of transit info people. And I'm just wondering, how have people been doing with our transit here?
It seems that everything's flowing really nicely, and everybody's having a good time. We haven't had any problems that I've heard of.
How do you like the blue uniforms? Did you find that that's a nice, stylish uniform to be wearing?
I think so. I like them. They're almost like a Lulu jacket, so I like it.
I noticed you're wearing question marks in certain places. Do you find people come with you with all kinds of questions, even not related to transit?
Yeah, I'd say most of our questions are unrelated to transit. Like where the pavilions are and where the good places are to go in the city.
Mm. What's a common question that you've gotten?
Where's Robson Street or where's Robson Square?
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of nationalities have you found here? Have you ever got much time to get a feel of like where people are from?
It's much better.
Russia. I see a lot of people from Russia. You see those bright jackets everywhere.
Uh-huh. Holland, Switzerland.
Yeah, oh, the Dutch.
Switzerland, the Dutch, yeah. Yeah, are
they
big.
Got the nice outfits.
Yeah, they got great outfits and hats and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you found anyone coming to you from Vancouver that has no idea where they are? It looks so different here.
Yeah, you get turned around easily because of all the crowds, so a lot of locals are asking. A lot of locals aren't used to taking transit either, so once they come out, they don't know what's going on or what lines to take.
So, would you like to tell the folks something on the radio?
The Davie and Robson buses have been rerouted because there's so much pedestrian traffic on Robson Street. Now the number 5, 6, and the night buses go southbound on Richards, westbound on Davie, northbound on Denman, eastbound on Georgia, and move to Pender Street and then do the whole loop again southbound on Richards.
Okay, thank you very much. And what is your official mandate or role here as a tourist information kind of transit info?
Giving people information on transit. We do have official media people that we can send you to talk to through our transit host center.
Okay. I'm just doing casual on the street. Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for listening to Sustainable Futures. This is episode 49. All episodes are available on radioforall.net. That's radio number 4all.net. Put Sustainable Futures in the search engine. And all episodes will come up. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.